Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know, the leaves are.
What's up, everyone? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with you today. And I got a very, very special guest today. I ran into him at Fox. And from my perspective, he's the genius when it comes to cyber technology, and he knows more than anybody I've ever met. My friend Raj Goel from BrainLink.com, as well as RajGoel.com. What's up, young man?
Lots of wonderful things. What's in your mind?
Well, you know, Raj, you know, we see all this stuff and around, and there's all kinds of things that go on, and of course, the more sophisticated we get, the more sophisticated the criminals get as well. But take us through BrainLink and who you guys are and what you do, because I really want to get mixed into it. You and I had some good conversation together, and I want to really educate the audience on what's going on and why something they think might work doesn't work and what they need to do about it.
Sure. So BrainLink is a New York City-based IT consulting firm, and our primary clientele are hedge funds, private equity firms, and construction and contracting firms headquartered in New York City. So that's what BrainLink does. I, as Raj Goel, founder and owner of the firm, but also a security researcher, I've been speaking around the world for the last 12 years. And it started out in 2005 when I attended a legal session at the New York City Bar, where the discussion was, is Gmail and Google safe to use in our law practice? And having studied some law as a student and having been in technology since I was about 3 feet tall, something didn't make sense to me. And I started looking into, there's a law from 1986 when Reagan was president called the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, ECPA. And it said that any email held online for more than 6 months or any information online database was not subject to the privacy protections of the U.S. Constitution. So basically the government, the federal government, considered all email that was held online for more than 6 months or anything in an online database to be no different than garbage left at the curbside. And if garbage is next to your house, it's protected by various privacy laws and by convention. But if you put garbage on your curb for pickup by the sanitation department, anybody can go in through your garbage, take whatever they want, and you have no legal rights to it. The government considers garbage on the sidewalk abandoned property. Similarly, they consider online email more than 6 months old online abandoned property. And I couldn't figure out how is Gmail pulling off this trick where they said in 2005 and they say today, you know, never delete email. So I couldn't figure out whether Gmail had really, really smart attorneys or they had found a loophole in the law or they were, pardon the language, lying to the customer. And what I discovered back in 2005, and it's been true every year since, is the Gmails, the Facebooks, the Salesforces, they're lying by omission. They're not telling you that by using their services, you're giving up your constitutional rights and your legally protected rights. And that was really my road to Damascus, a moment, if you will, where I looked at, you know, I had grown up trusting technology. You know, Microsoft, Apple, IBM, and to me, IBM in some ways is still almost the same as God. You know, IBM invented this field, and I grew up believing IBM could do no wrong. And Microsoft and Apple and Google basically got that halo by default. But the more I studied the cyber economy, the more I realized it was a giant con game, if you will, where they're not telling the user everything. The other thing I discovered in the last 12 years is software is the only field in American economy where the consumers have no rights. And if I'm GM and I sell you a defective car or I make a defective product, I am legally on the hook to fix that mistake. If I'm McDonald's and I have tainted or poisoned beef, I've got to take it back. I've got to fix a problem before you catch it. Or if you eat tainted or bad food, I'm legally on the hook to make you whole. Software is the only industry where the consumer has no rights. And in our day job, you know, when we are managing IT for hedge funds and construction firms and so on, I really thought we'd be kind of like the people from Mission Impossible, you know, black shades, black suits, doing super cool stuff. In reality, most IT practitioners are glorified janitors and plumbers. You know, we're cleaning the sewage, we're cleaning the mess, and at the end of the day, our customers, who are really good people, really phenomenal, smart people, they're paying us a ton of money to clean up problems, clean up mistakes that they should never have to clean up. You know, if look at Toyota, look at GM. Toyota did not build the faulty brakes in their car, some subcontractor did. But when Toyota discovered it, they took a multi-billion-dollar hit to globally go ahead and contact customers and repair their vehicles. Takata, a small Japanese manufacturer, made all the airbags, you know, that impact on multiple car brands. It's not Takata I'm suing in court. It's Honda coming in saying, hey, your, you know, airbag that we sold you in the car is defective. We need to replace it at no charge. Bring it at your next visit. Whereas in software, what happened, you know, last time you got a virus or you got spam or malware, did Microsoft or Apple or Google take the hit for cleaning up the mess? Nah, it was you and it was me. So I've been lecturing for the last 12 years or so now on cybersecurity and privacy because on the corporate end, we're stuck with cleaning, paying for the cleanup of messes we didn't create. You didn't write Windows software. You, and when you bought that computer, you had no knowledge of what you were buying. Unlike a car, which, you know, a national highway, and the insurance guys, you know, they test the vehicles every year. So, you know, it's a 5-star car versus a 4-star versus a death trap. And in the past, when manufacturers have built really, really bad cars, the Ford Pinto comes to mind, the feds and the lawsuits have put them out of business. So, on the other hand, what happens when a software company sells you lousy software? Oh, yeah. What do they tell you? Buy the newest version, and they make more money selling you poisoned goods.
They only tell me you're the only guy it ever happened to. That's what I always hear. But
yeah.
So let me ask you this, a simple question. So I worked for a company, and they held the server. So they're entitled to go into all my emails that are 6 months or older because it's like public domain?
Okay. Depends on who you're talking about. The employer has full rights to all your email and your communications unless your term or your contract employment contract says otherwise. So as an employer, I have full rights to get into all communications generated by or to my employees on our servers. For as law enforcement's concerned, if your server is sitting in your office, then it is considered your private property, and the feds have to get a search warrant, as they would if they wanted to search the contents of your physical desk. If your email is sitting on the cloud somewhere, Google, Microsoft, Gmail, Apple Mail, Yahoo, whatever, then they don't need a search warrant. They can literally get a third-party records request if they even want to go that high. Or they can simply just say, give us this data, and most providers will, because under current federal and state laws, if your information is held by a third-party broker, it doesn't belong to you. You know, let's take GM, for example. They've got their OnStar system. All the telematics OnStar creates is property of GM, not you, even though you're the driver, or your cell phone records. You make the calls on your cell phone, you send texts, you do all that surfing. All those records created are not your property. They're property of your telephone carrier, and they can sell it, license it, give it to anybody they want without having to notify you.
That's pretty scary. You got to hold on. You got to stay with me. We got to take a break, but I'm excited because this has got me going pretty good. I'm with Raj Goel from BrainLink.com, a cyber security expert, written a couple of books, which we'll also talk about. But man, I tell you, it's kind of scary when you start to hear some of the things he's talking about. But we're going to step out here for a break. But before we do, first of all, make sure you go down and like this show, get every other show. You can download them at libertytalk.fm. Every day they're up there. We've just passed the 200,000 downloads a month. And of course, I want to make you one. We're trying to get to 300,000. Make sure you follow me at Twitter at Bubba Average Joe. And also go check out BubbaTrading.com. Make sure you get yourself hooked up and ready for hedging. As the markets, we never know where they're going to go, but we do know one thing for sure. If we're hedged and properly taken care of, we don't really care. We only benefit and get to compound our portfolio by taking care of it. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back right after the break with more from Raj Goel from BrainLink, The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back.
Of the season.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Raj Goel. BrainLink International is the correct name. I was wrong, and Raj corrected me, but I'm glad, happy to get it right. So, Raj, you know, I know you're super smart in this field, and I know you've done a lot of stuff, and I know you've also written a couple of books. And tell me about the books. I mean, you've got some, you know, I read both, and I find some interesting things in there, and I think there's a lot out there that nobody ever thinks about, but you did. Take us through it.
Sure, absolutely. My first book is The Most Important Secrets to Getting Great Results from IT. They're both on Amazon if you search for Raj Goel, G-O-E-L. The first book is a love letter to our clients and to our prospects and to any business owner. Whether you're a five-person carpet cleaning company or a 2,000-person Fortune 500 firm, most people don't know how to buy IT services, IT vendors, or really look at technologies on anything other than a magical black box. And so my first book was really based on 25 years of being in the business, lessons I learned from my customers, lessons I learned from my competition, things I wish my customers knew before they even talked to us. So it really is, here are the things you ought to talk about, you know, even you, Bubba, here are the things you ought to think about before you talk to your IT guy next time, because there really isn't a beginner's guide or a buyer's guide to, hey, here are the questions you may want to ask. You know, it's like, it's no different than if you're buying a house or buying a car, any large investment, or even when you're engaging a new attorney or a new CPA, there are a bunch of questions you ought to be asking them. And there's a great commercial on TV where they talk about investments where, you know, the couple asks all these questions about the stuff in the grocery store, stuff that costs four or five, you know, 10 bucks a pound. But when it comes to an investment advisor, they kind of climb up and go, okay, well, for many businesses, IT is one of the most expensive purchases they'll ever make. And it's not just the hardware and the software. It's the expertise you're buying or expertise you're not buying. And so my first book was really, you know, dear business owner, dear Todd, dear listener, here are the things you may want to think about and talk to your IT guy about. And also, here are things I've learned and my clients have taught me about how to grow your business. You know, the most important lesson in book number one is if you're a business owner, you absolutely must take at least 2 weeks off each year, no cell phone, no email, go on vacations, and if you're a smart business owner, enforce that of the rest of your team. Now, you might ask, why is an IT guy telling me to take vacation? Here's why. One, as a business owner and a family man, I have found that for 10 years I took no vacations, my life was miserable. The more vacations I take, the more I disconnect. Better ideas I have, I come back energized, creative, I solve a lot of long-standing problems. And the other thing we've discovered over the last 50 years of research is in most businesses, especially small businesses, the number one killer of small business is insider fraud, embezzlement. Whether it's the bookkeeper, you know, stealing 50 bucks a week, which over 30, 40 years becomes a couple of $1 million, you know, it always starts off small. There are hundreds, if not thousands of case studies where they show that a small business died because somebody very well entrusted, could be an employee, could be a family member, doesn't plan to steal big. They're not buying a Lamborghini. They're buying maybe Christmas presents. Maybe they're making up a shortfall with a paycheck by buying groceries. And next thing you know, the owner thinks the company's got, you know, X million in the bank or they're doing really well. And then they discover this embezzlement, which destroys the firm. And in larger firms, whether it is Societe Generale, where they were on the hook for $7.1 billion in liabilities because of one trader who never took any vacations and never took any time off, put the whole company at risk, or Nick Leeson. So whether companies are large or small, if your employees are not taking vacations and they're trusted employees, chances are, more often than not, they're engaging in some sort of crime or some sort of malfeasance. And the best thing you could actually do as a business owner is hire great employees and then make sure they take time off, because this gives you a chance to train somebody else to do their job so you're not held hostage by your employees. Also, more importantly, it lets you see how important someone really is to your company, because everybody thinks they're important, but as a business owner, how do you know? And so that is, you know, one great lesson. The other is talk about look at security and IT in a holistic manner. It's not just what you do at the office. It's also what do you do at home? What do your kids do at home? What do your employees' kids do at home? Because the number one risk we see in our client businesses, we've secured their network. You know, their corporate network is as good as it's going to get based on their budget and the industry they're in. Our real threat vector his employees when they go home. Because when they go home, what do? Either they take the work laptop home, they work from home, or the VPN in, or they use the family machine, or they bring in thumb drives. You know, they took some files home on a USB key, worked on it over the weekend on their so-called vacation or whatever else. They come back, they plug the infected drive in, take the network down. We've been hit with it so many times that that we learned, and the first security protocol we put in place with our clients once we onboard them is the employee home policy. What are they doing at home? What are they allowed to do? And what are they not allowed to do? Because most businesses trust their employees. They never take into account. You can trust the people, but you can't trust their gadgets. Most home computers are heavily infected because homeowners and, you know, you and I as individuals really can't afford to pay the appropriate fees and get the proper software, hardware, and consulting to secure our homes. The other thing we've learned over the last 10 years or so is, whereas everybody I meet, whether they make $100,000 a year or they make $100 million a year, they all think they're poor or they're not rich enough. But in reality, if you're making more than $20,000 a year, that is below the poverty line in the U.S. If you're making more than $20,000 a year globally, you're in the 1%. And that means for somebody in Azerbaijan or Latvia or even, you know, Tampa, Florida or Brazil, for the global hacker community, which is a industrial crime. You know, cybercrime is no different than the mafia. They're cyber mafias, and they're making billions each year. And for somebody in Azerbaijan, where the local economy, you know, where the monthly salary might be $20 a month, if you're making $20,000 a year, you might as well be Midas. And these criminals, they're sitting there, large and small, and they have these factories where they're pumping out cyber scams, phishing emails, all these attacks to snare you. You know, one great example for you. Remember before the economy burst, we had all this spam about refinance your mortgage, get a lower interest rate?
Yeah.
You ever wonder why somebody in Eastern Europe or Latvia or Russia or China would care about your interest rate?
They want my email, I guess. They want something from me, I guess.
They already have your email. Here's how the whole deal worked. Somebody sitting in Eastern Europe or Asia or anywhere outside of the United States has no interest in your interest rates, and they can't do anything about it. But here's what the criminal organizations discovered. If they spam 1 million people, and let's say they get, you know, a 0.001% return rate, and even 100 people click on that thing to lower the interest rate, they fill out the information. They will sell it to a marketing firm. They'll sell it to somebody else. They'll sell it five ways up the river. By the time it lands at J.P. Morgan or Capital One's desks, they're paying $250 a qualified lead. Back when Spitzer was still Attorney General of New York State, he actually successfully prosecuted and sued Singular One, AT&T, Travelocity, and one of the mortgage companies because they were actually funding the spam economy. New York Times did a great article. You know, why do we have spam and malware? In large part because corporate America is funding it. They're funding the crime that's been committed against us because, yeah, they hire marketing agencies to get qualified leads. What are most marketing agencies doing, especially the ethical ones? They're subcontracting. They're subcontracting. And fifth or sixth layers down, they're contracting some spammy firm out over the web to go get them qualified leads. And this is how the entire spam economy is built to a large extent. The other part of it is if I can get enough information about you, I can commit credit for it, fraud. It might be something as simple as charging, you know, $1.97 or $2 or $10 on your credit card every month. When was the last time you checked your credit card statement and disputed a $10 charge? Most people don't. Or I can go to the other extreme and build a complete credit profile and buy houses and cars and property in your name. And in every jurisdiction I have studied, U.S., Canada, Europe, wherever criminals find loopholes in the law or societal cultures, they will conduct ID fraud and credit fraud because it is seen as a victimless crime. And in every country, including ours, if you commit credit fraud against somebody in the far in Eastern Europe, it's technically not illegal.
If
you're a foreign national in a foreign jurisdiction, the Russians have no laws against Russians hacking the U.S. It seems a patriotic duty.
Raj, hold that thought, buddy. Hold that thought. This is Raj Goel from BrainLink International. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download a version of the Bubba Show. We've now got over 200,000, and we want to get to 300, so I'm counting on you to help me out. go check out BubbaTrading.com and make sure that you read what I write every day. In fact, and get yourself set up for my hedging, futures, or options program. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz with Raj Goel from BrainLink International. We'll be back right after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bob Horowitz.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Chalady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Raj Goel from BrainLink International. Also, rajgoel.com. Check him out. The guy has written books. He's given you, I think, some pretty serious information, and I think it's wise to take notes of what he's saying. Raj, go ahead and finish your thought about the spamming and what goes on with these other countries, because I know it happens all the time, and I want to ask you a specific question after you're through.
Absolutely, and actually, I want to correct myself. I misspoke about something. If you're an American citizen or you're in the United States and you hack computers around the world, it is against federal law. On the other hand, for the Chinese, the Russians, Bulgarians, Brazilians to hack Americans, it's not against their local laws. So they're, you know, we see hacking as a federal crime, and if you get caught, you may get steel bracelets. But in most foreign jurisdictions, hacking Americans or Canadians is seen as a good economic thing. It's a patriotic duty, if you will. There are a lot of Russian crime gangs, for example, that write viruses and malware and phishing campaigns, where if they detect your keyboard is set to Russian, they will not infect your machine because they don't want to be visited by the local cops. So book number one really talked about how to grow your business, how to buy IT, and how to engage with IT businesses and vendors appropriately, and how to manage your employees in this new economy. Book number two was a book I wrote to teach my kids and our employees' kids, and it's titled Unplugged, A Luddite's Guide to Cybersecurity, What to Teach Your Kids and Grandparents Before They Access the Internet. The way I see it, privacy and security and safety get conflated a lot. You know, we're seeing right now in Apple versus FBI, people talk of privacy versus security all the time. They forget about the safety component. And if you read any of the giant terms of services, the things we all click, I agree on, Facebook tells you, you know, if you're under 13, using the service is illegal. iTunes tells you, and if you're under 13 or under 18, you can't buy from iTunes. But the reality is, we as consumers, as parents, as grandparents, we don't think twice before we click accept and we put stuff online. So about 2 years ago, I was talking to an editor of a security magazine, and I made an offhand remark. I said, you know, we're actually destroying children's privacy before they're born. She said, you mean after they're born? I said, nope, before they're born. She's like, I don't believe it. Show me your data. So I wrote a 10-page article, which then got published in the First Security magazine, and the editor gave me the best compliment I've ever received. She said, I've been doing this for about 20 years, and when I and my copy editor read your article, this was the most unsettling article we had ever read. And I figured, you know what, if I can scare people who read security articles for a living, if I can scare them straight, victory is mine. And so the book, too, came out of that conversation, and it really is designed. I take news stories, And then I put it into stories and settings that you can understand. Here are the things you need to talk to your children about. And if they are between 5 and 10, how to talk to them about online services properly. If they are in teenagers in high school, how to talk to them about using social media or not using social media, why they may want to avoid it. And I use examples of how kids have been denied admission to college, lost scholarships, been kicked out of college, gone to jail. As they get older, how to, you know, what are the risks, the pros and cons of dating sites? You know, you see eHarmony, Tinder, all these guys talking about swipe right, swipe right, swipe left. You know, take the questionnaire to get the dating profiles and get a date or get a mate. But they never tell you about the long-term risks and the privacy threats and safety threats of using dating sites. And for our corporate clients, this is an area ripe with embarrassing data that is an act that has been used by legal counsel in divorce proceedings, by opposition research. There's a lot of stuff people reveal online because they think they're being anonymous or private or cute or clever, when in reality, if it's digital, it's never private. I mean, just look what happened over the weekend. The Panama Papers came out. I don't know if they're real or if they're fraud. If they're fraudulent, that's scary. If they're real, and it looks like they are, the fourth largest private trust law firm on the planet just got hacked, or somebody walked out with all their data, 11.5 million emails, and now it's having legal ramifications and political ramifications across every developed economy in the world. You know, you've got the Icelandic Prime Minister, you've got Putin, the American data should be coming out shortly. So if it's electronic, it's never going to be private, and most people assume that, ooh, it's Google, it must be safe, Apple, it must be safe, Microsoft, it must be safe, you know, Salesforce, it must be safe. When in reality, electronic information is the most insecure data store out there.
So what's a guy to do?
What can you do? One, think before you click. Think before you post stuff online. There are conversations you're having or you need to have with your spouse, your girlfriend, your kids, your vendors, your lawyer. There's some conversations and discussions that should never be committed to email or electronically. Some are best done in face-to-face. There are other things that you and I have probably said or done in our lives that should never be sent over Twitter or Facebook or email. You know, in real life, if I say, hey, you know, if I say, Todd, I'm going to kill you, you can look at my face and you can tell, you know, you can determine whether I'm angry, I'm pissed off, or I'm joking. But when I send you a tweet or an email or a Facebook post saying, Todd, I'm going to kill you next time I see you, there is no emotion there. As human beings, we're biologically wired to look at physical reactions and judge emotion and credibility of a threat. In black and white and print, there is no emotion. And depending on who's looking at that tweet or that text or that post or that email or that private communication down the road, they can slant it any way they like. And the biggest problem with the digital data is there is no emotional context. There is no context around it. So you and I have met, and I, you know, if I say, Todd X, I'm going to see you, I'm going to kill you, man.
Oh, my God, I'm getting out of here.
You probably know I'm joking. I'm not exactly a big hulking bruiser. On the other hand, if your attorney's reading it 5 years down the road, because you and I are in a lawsuit, where is your attorney going to go? Hopefully he or she is going to go, my client was threatened by this scary man from New York, and he was afraid for his life, and that's why Bubba did what he did. So one big risk with digital data is there's no emotional context to it. And 4, 5, 10 years down the road, you won't remember what you said. You know, this conversation we're having right now, honestly, go read the podcast word for word 10 years down the road. You won't remember it, but because we're recording it, the audio recording will be on file, digital transcription will be on file, and at the end of the day, when it comes to lawyers, it's what you said and the exact phrasing and intent goes, you know, intent for the most part goes out the window. And we're not teaching our kids. You and I are old enough. We learned loose lips sink ships. We learned to look both ways before crossing the street. There are conversations I had with my friends. There are things I did before I was 18, which are now against federal law. We all did this stuff, okay? We all drank before we were old enough to drink. We all drive a bit too fast. We all did stuff. And there are things I did and my friends did. Thankfully, we're old enough, we have forgotten. You know, thank you, old age and fitting memories. On the other hand, my kids will never, ever have that freedom. Your grandkids, your nieces, nephews, you know, the people, the kids you care about, any listeners care about, they will never have that freedom. If they're under 20, they have lived in a digital prison their entire lives. I mean, prisoners on death row have more constitutional rights than our children do. Every tweet the kids have ever sent, every Snapchat, every photo, every email, every thought they've ever had that they've ever written down is stored somewhere, and it'll never be used for their benefit. It'll always be used against them, either by a marketer or a lawyer or law enforcement. You know, one of the more horrific stories that I cite in the book is this phenomena of sexting and teenage sexting. The teenagers in our lives, they didn't invent the smartphone. They did not invent a camera phone. I challenge you to go to any carrier right now and try to buy a phone without a camera. It's nearly impossible. And yet, so we give our kids these smartphones. They're young. I mean, we all played doctor. We all did stuff with the members of the appropriate sex, you know, whatever turns you on. The kids, yeah, they're sending each other, you know, naked or half-nude pictures or selfies. Hey, look at media. Look at our life. It's hypersexualized. There's nudity practically everywhere from prime time to Saturday morning cartoon shows in one form or another. And yet, if two children who are in an active relationship where the parents know they're dating and they're having sex, they take naked selfies and send it to each other, again, in federal law, it's a federal crime. It's called child porn. And in jurisdiction after jurisdiction, prosecutors are locking up kids, branding them sex predators for life for sending topless photos of each other. And the law does not distinguish between a couple sharing photos amongst each other with permission versus somebody using these images to shame or embarrass somebody. And there was a great case happening just early this year, a couple of months ago, where in North Carolina, this couple was caught sexting. They were arrested. They went in front of the judge, and the judge gave them the lightest sentence possible, but the best thing the judge did was he said in his ruling, you know, if you two kids had taken pictures of each other, taken Polaroids, put them in an envelope, and sent them over the postal mail, you would not be in my court. But because you use computer equipment, I am legally required to sentence you. How messed up is it that we're locking up our kids for doing things kids have done forever?
Well, it's messed up, but of course, if you read my quote, I said that we're raising a generation of morons because we don't get it, and we're letting too many things get away, and that's one of the big problems that I have with all this technology is we don't have the proper knowledge on how to use it, which you're giving us right now. We're Todd, with my man.
I hate to interrupt you, buddy, but I disagree with you primarily. We can't blame the kids. We're not raising a generation of morons. The reality is, from the moment we left the caves, the only progress in human society is when the crazy yahoos did something dumb and stupid that became the social convention.
Hold that social convention for a minute. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. I'm with Raj Goel. Make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim, built by traders for traders. Every day they have swim lessons. Go visit my buddy Steve and Kevin. They'll help you out. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Raj Goel from BrainLink International and also RajGoel.com. All right, so I did say that I believe we're raising a generation of morons, which I still believe, whether you disagree with me or not, which is cool. That's what makes an opinion. But we're teaching too much technology, and our parents are putting in too many things of toys because most of them are two-family working, and we're not doing the right job in schools to educate them on how to live a real life. We're educating them how to take the next test. To me, that's a problem, but go ahead and disagree with me and tell us how we're going to fix the problem and about cybersecurity.
Sure. I agree with you on part ways on what you said. Yes, the schools are teaching them how to take the next test, and we've always had dumb kids. We've always had smart kids. The difference between the kids today and you and I at the same age, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, is the laws are stacked against our kids differently, and we as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles have not taken the time to understand that slowly but surely society is stacked against our kids. The kids didn't buy the software, they didn't invent the software, but the laws are stacked against them. And in every jurisdiction, the prosecutors are using crimes meant for prosecuting criminals and robbers and rapists and using them to nail children. prosecutorial overreach is not a new phenomenon. It's been going on forever. But in the last 20 years, it's taken on a whole new level of depravity. You know, let's take 9/11. Horrific thing happened in New York. And I remember just being catatonic for 3 days. They had wounded my city. And then we passed the Patriot Act, ostensibly designed to prosecute and investigate terrorists. And we give the FBI national security letters, and it was designed to combat terrorism. In 99% of the or more of the NSL cases, the FBI abused that privilege to go after low-lying drug cases. You know, I have this theory, and you and your audience are welcome to agree or disagree, that prohibition, you know, at the turn of the last century, was a war against the immigrants. The drug war was a war against the poor. Black or white didn't matter. Black, brown, or Mexican, the drug war was a war against the poor. You know, if you bought marijuana, you went to jail. If you smoked cocaine, you became president. And the cyber war is a war against the middle class across every economy. Look at the cyber laws in any country. The U.S. laws against hacking and online surveillance. What the government is doing and what they're pursuing in courts to do is exactly the kind of stuff that we protest against when there was the evil empire. I grew up in Reagan's America. I remember going, when the Berlin Wall fell, what were the East Germans thinking? How is it possible that 10% of the population could actively spy for the government? And now we live in Zuckerberg's America, and Eric Schmidt's America, where 99% of America is spying on each other and calling it social media. We have gone from a nation of builders and thinkers and doers to a nation of unpaid spies. We don't even get paid for this. And we're doing it to ourselves, we're doing it to our kids. I read a story this afternoon. You know, Google bought Nest, and I thought Nest was a pretty dangerous product. It's their home automation system. Yeah, they bought Nest, they bought Revolve, and then they just put out an announcement today. Oh, yeah, in a couple of weeks, we're shutting down Revolve. So every one of you who paid a couple of $100 or $1,000 for your Revolve device, congratulations, you now have you will pretty soon have a coaster. Why? Because nothing in the law says that they have to keep supporting a product. They can do whatever they want. And the abandonment of software and technology is a growing issue. And just a couple of months ago, one of the large cable companies got sued. They're, you know, every cable company and phone company I know is not selling you a home automation system, whether it's AT&T or Verizon or Comcast or Charter. You know, they all have these great commercials. You can be on vacation and lock your house from a smartphone. What they don't tell you is that the technology they're all using, most of them using called Zigbee, is fundamentally flawed, has major holes in it. It's been demonstrated on stage at conferences, and the vendors go, well, we're using the best product available. I am sorry. If they were selling you poisoned water, they'd be in jail. If they're selling you poisoned soda, they'd be taking a stock hit. Because they're selling you poisoned software, they get a revenue bump. So what can we do about it? One, as parents, grandparents, and members of society, educate ourselves on the new normal of laws. Secondly, we really need to lobby to get rid of the software exemption. Potato chips, microchips, they ought to have followed the same laws. Why is it that Microsoft and Google and Apple get a free pass on selling us poison software? McDonald's and Coca-Cola and GM don't get this privilege. And if we don't, look at what is happening. Every sector of society is becoming software. You know, look at cars. Historically, you bought a car, you owned the car. You bought a tractor, you owned the tractor. You could repair it, you could modify it, you could hot rod it. As long as you didn't break a bunch of laws, you were fine. You know what? You want a tractor spewing out flames going 200 feet on your farm? Go right ahead. That used to be true until 10 years ago. Just 2 years ago, John Deere sued a farmer who spent $500,000 on a brand new tractor because the farmer wanted to repair it. John Deere said, nope, you can't do that. You own the hardware, the tractor. We own the software. And you can only use our licensed experts to fix your tractor. What did GM and Ford and all the car manufacturers do? Did they fight for the user? No. They filed amicus curiae briefs on part of John Deere. As we move towards smart cars, self-driving cars, who actually owns that car? Do we actually own the gadgets we buy? Are we merely renting them in a rentier economy? This is where we're heading. Every sector of economy is becoming software, from banking to manufacturing to vehicles, and we need to decide as an economy and a society, are we owners or are we sharecroppers? And right now, we are in a digital sharecropping economy with all the racist and economic connotations the word sharecropper evokes.
Wow. So how do we get away from that?
Same when we got rid of sharecropping and slavery and all the, and civil rights. We have to first educate ourselves. You know, one analogy I'll draw for you is if you look at the turn of the 19th century, after the Civil War, American Civil War, the number one leading cause of death in America was tainted food you bought at the local store owner, at the local market. We had no food safety laws. And our 1904-1905 muckrakers, a bunch of uppity New Yorkers, got together to sponsor the Safe Food and Safe Water movement. And Upton Sinclair wrote a book called Into the Jungle. For the first time, he exposed how meat was made in America. Yeah, rat droppings, dead animals. You know, people fell into the meat factories in Chicago. They didn't stop the industrial factories from making sausage. They sold you tainted meat because there was no laws against it. And a decade later, Congress passed the Clean Food and Water Act, which led to the creation of the FDA and has saved more lives than any other act of Congress. We need the Safe Software Act.
Okay.
We need consumers to be protected from manufacturers because they're exploiting a loophole in the law, and they will as long as we as ignorant consumers and not citizens keep buying their garbage and not going, hey, the emperor has no clothes.
So how do I take care of the simple things like my email?
Great question. I don't have any quick and easy answers.
Okay.
Step one is know what you're going to put in there and have a conversation with your family and your kids about what never to put in email. And there are jokes we make in real life that don't belong in email. The threats we make in real life in human-to-human conversations and on the phone and video that don't belong in electronic communication. Secondly, assume you're always under surveillance. And if you read, all the Cold War thrillers from Ian Fleming or John le Carré or any of the spy novels, well, you are now James Bond. You are now Smiley. Assume that anything you say or do is being recorded somewhere and behave appropriately. And third and most importantly, if you're over the age of 35 and you've got it made, you've got a good job, you've got a good family, it's time for us to remember the rights you and I enjoy, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, clean air, clean water. You and I and our listeners, we didn't earn these rights. They were gifted to us. Somebody else died for us to have these freedoms. Some died 20 years ago. Some died 200 years ago. It's now our job as citizens to be real citizens and not just consumers. And if you want to be a consumer, great, be a consumer. But then you are a sheep in a corporate factory, and not everybody has to be a citizen. But every generation, we need a new group to stand up at the ramparts and go, I will defend this economy. I will defend this society. It is my job to be a civic citizen, whatever that looks like. Vote in elections. Talk to your politicians. Run for city office. Educate yourself. And if you are in my camp and you want better software and you want more liability for the manufacturers and more safety for the community, great. If in the
Raj Goel, thank you so much for coming on. BrainLink International, rajgoel.com. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bubba. It's a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to doing this with you soon.
I look forward to having you back. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same station. LibertyTalk.fm. Download it, and we'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Have a great day. Thank you so much. We'll see you tomorrow.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.